Boston-based detective Patrick Kenzie first appeared in Dennis Lehane's award-winning debut novel, A Drink Before the War. That was back in 1994. But Kenzie reached a huge audience when Dennis's 1998 novel, Gone Baby Gone, was made into a film. In that book and movie, a four-year-old girl is gone. Her uncle and aunt ask Patrick to join in the hunt for little Amanda.
We want to hire you to augment the investigation of Amanda.
Is that right?
You know how in JonBenet Ramsey, the family hired investigators?
So the police all right with you hiring outside help?
The police need to worry about finding my niece.
A scene from the film Gone Baby Gone. And though Patrick and his lover Angie find Amanda, we wonder if it had been better if she stayed gone. That's a question that lingers in Dennis Lehane's most recent novel, Moonlight Mile. In this book, Patrick and Angie are married, they live with their child, and the ghosts of Amanda, who's now 16 and gone again, and Patrick goes to find her. Moonlight Mile is out in paperback today. When we spoke with Dennis Lehane last fall, we reminded him that he'd once told us he was through with Patrick and Angie. So we asked, what brought them back for Moonlight Mile?
I honestly have no clue. The only sort of artsy-fartsy part of how I write is I can only write about characters when they knock on the door and talk to me. And I can't explain it any other way. I can't go fishing for something. And they just came knocking on the door again. They'd been quiet for 11 years.
Well, let's remind people why these characters might have been knocking on your door to ask for a different ending. In Gone Baby Gone, it turns out Amanda was taken by people who really cared for her. But Patrick tracks them down. They go to jail.
Right.
And when we meet Patrick again at the beginning of Moonlight Mile, he's agonizing over that decision. Would you read that passage for us?
12 years ago, I'd been wrong. Every day that had passed since, roughly 4,400 of them, I was sure of that. But 12 years ago, I'd been right. Leaving Amanda with kidnappers, no matter how vested they were in her welfare, was leaving her with kidnappers. In the 4,400 days since I'd taken her back, I was sure this was true. So where did that leave me?
Is this an author deciding to rewrite a previous book because the characters came knocking on his door and said, we didn't like that ending?
No. I think it's about a central obsession, I think, that shows up in my work a lot, which is you could do the right thing or the supposed right thing and still have a lot of regrets. You can do the wrong thing and know that you did right. I don't believe there's too many absolutes out there.
Well, let's talk about out there. This world that your characters swim in, the voices, pitch perfect. Patrick has gone to get a laptop back from some really dangerous guys. They stole it, and Patrick is with his sidekick, Bubba. And now Bubba has already shot someone, Max, who's writhing on the floor. Guns are pulled everywhere. And there's this exchange between Bubba and one of Max's henchmen. And Bubba says, you could lose a few, but you're not an orca or anything. I mean, just lay off the white bread and the cheese. I'm thinking Atkins, the guy says. I tried that, Bubba says. Yeah, you got to give up alcohol for 2 weeks. 2 weeks? And on the floor, this guy Max is writhing because he's been shot, you know, kicking and writhing. And they're talking about the Atkins diet.
Yeah, it's a sort of absurdism. I notice that in really heated situations, there's a moment when somebody will say something just sort of comic without sometimes knowing. I remember I was breaking up with a woman once, and we're both writers. In the height of a screaming fest, she said, you ought to come with a warning label. And I said, wow, great line. And she said, thank you. And then she went on to, you know what I mean? But it was like a writerly moment. It was like, wow, good line. I may have to use that someday, you know. So the Bubba scenes are always, he's always having some sort of side conversation, almost with himself. And then in this case, he's having it with this guy.
Isn't there an exchange like that between Patrick and Angie?
I think there was something, I'm trying to remember the moment. But also, they fight a lot in this book because I think I was trying to look at a marriage under stress. They don't have any money. And that's what I was really looking at in this book was, who is Patrick in the new economic climate?
Here's where Patrick is really starting to question. Yes, he's a private detective for hire. He's not liking himself for doing that kind of work.
No, he hates himself. The very first chapter, you think he's about to bust this guy, and then you realize he's actually working for the bad, you know, in a sense, the bad guys.
Tell us where else you get that worldview. It feels like you, Dennis Lehane, get out there, and somebody told you about, for instance, the Russian mobs that Patrick and Angie and Amanda get. No,
not so much. I knew the Russian mobs were floating around identity theft a lot. And so when the book starts to deal with that on some level, it's like, oh, okay, so who would she have crossed paths with? And the Russians came up, you know. The one thing I do is, because I divide my time now between Boston and West Central Florida, I get back here and my ear goes immediately up. I mean, I'm just tuned up real quick. This is the best city in the world to listen to dialogue. There were these kids misbehaving in a playground where I live.
Here
in Boston.
Here
in Charleston. And their mother said to them, grabbed the kid and said, if I have to tell you one more time to behave, I'm taking you to the playground in the friggin' projects. You see how you like it, you get shot. She said this to a five-year-old, you know? And I just think, that's Boston, baby. You know what I mean? That's, you know, I don't know you'd hear that in Chicago. So
just people might remember Charlestown was the setting for Ben Affleck's recent movie,
yeah.
The Town.
Yeah.
And it has a gentrified section and a section that is still the projects. And there she was threatening to take them over to the other side.
And you could hear that. You'd hear that in South. You'd hear that in Dorchester. You'd hear that in Hyde Park. It's a city voice,
yeah.
You know.
Well, you remind us, too, of poverty and an underclass that's in white neighborhoods. That gets us back to Amanda.
Yep.
This little girl who was lost and found in Gone Baby Gone and returned to a horrific mother. We meet her again. She's incredibly together. She could possibly go to Harvard.
Yeah.
She climbed out. And yet, also, she's going to do some very dangerous, risky things to survive in the end. What are you saying about her? And you know?
One of the things that it was a stat that I've never forgotten was when you're in when I was in human services and I was working with troubled kids from broken families, that females can have a much longer gestation period before they show the damage. So you can find females in really destroyed families, I mean absolutely wrecked families, who are very put together, who get straight A's in school, and they don't go bananas until, say, they're 15 or they're 20 even. They can maybe hold it together a lot longer than boys for some reason. So when I was re-envisioning Amanda, I said, well, what if she is so in control of herself that, as Patrick says as the book goes on, is there anything human about her? He begins to say, where's the little girl in here? Where's the emotional person in here? She's just absolutely resolute and focused, and that is something that is both admirable and I think a little bit sad. I mean, there's some part of her that's never getting, she's never going to get back the little girl she was.
Yeah.
There was the thing that I remember about, and maybe had a lot to do with this, was I remember being in a situation where the police were called, we're in this home, everybody's screaming at each other, there'd been an assault, the police are coming through the door, it was absolute chaos, and the 10-year-old sister of the boy in question walked through this chaos and cleaned up. I mean, I'm talking cops. I'm talking father being cuffed against the wall. The whole thing. And she was going through very carefully, righting the chairs, making sure the table was wiped clean. And I just thought, wow, that's it. That's a detail I've never forgotten. That happened 20 years ago. Yeah. Never forgotten that detail.
Dennis, thank you as always. Terrific read. And the title, Moonlight Mile?
The Rolling Stones song.
Why?
Moonlight Mile. It's one of my favorite songs, and there's just a line in there, I am just living to be lying by your side, which I've always loved that line, and then it's, but I'm just another moonlight mile down the road. And I think I was thinking about it throughout the writing of the book, because even though it's never really said, Patrick just, all he wants in this book is just to get back home. But he's got to do what every working man has to do. He has to go out and do his job to put food on the table. He does not want to. He wants to be home with his girls, his wife, and his daughter.
Dennis, thank you.
Thank you.